now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Every goal, every game, everywhere. The Times and the Sunday Times. Now with Goals.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and I'm especially excited this week because Alison Rudd is back in the studio after her long, long absence, which I believe was work-related. Isn't that right, Alison?
Of course. I don't do holidays.
No. You were just researching hotels in the Seychelles. Is that right?
Well, researching hotels in Rio. That was part of it, yeah.
Very, very nicely done. And it's not just Alison, but even better, it's Tony Cascarino joining me in the studio again. And down the line, we have Rory Smith. Coming up, we'll be discussing Liverpool, Spurs, Remy Gard's departure, Dr. Boner. Come on, Al, you knew that was coming, right? But first, let's focus on the runaway Premier League leaders. Leicester and Southampton, we've sort of talked both these teams to death this year, but it is a hugely compelling story. So let's make this very simple and start with the incidents by turning to our qualified referee, Alison Rudd. Two possible handball claims. I was told by referee that the laws are very, very clear and I shouldn't bother him by asking about this. So he never told me what his opinion was. So I'm going to ask you. The Danny Simpson, for those who didn't see this, there's a goal-bound shot. He's in the way of the shot. It strikes his arm or his elbow, I think, when to me it looked like it was pretty close to his body. Penalty?
No. It's one of those incidents where emotionally it looks like a penalty. It sort of was very dramatic, and because he was where the goalkeeper should have been and his arm was moving and he managed to block and move the ball with his arm, in some respects, it looked like the most obvious handball, but if you look at all the factors you have to take into account to decide whether it is or not, it's perfectly feasible that it was not in the least bit deliberate. It was a natural action. His arm was where it should have been. He wasn't. If his arm had been anywhere else, it would have been a penalty, but his arm was exactly where it should have been as a person running across a goal would have looked like. So there was nothing unnatural or cheaty about it.
I get a sense that this will come up when I ask about the Huth penalty, but anybody dispute Alison's interpretation or have something meaningful or intelligent to add?
Never.
No. Okay, that's easy. Then the Robert Huth one. And by the way, the reason we're dwelling on this, it will become apparent in a second, is the Robert Huth incident on the cross. Penalty?
No, absolutely not. Really close range. And I think his eyes were closed because he was worried he might go in his face. No, it was not a penalty.
Well, I don't think it should make a difference if your eyes are closed. But it's interesting because Steve Nicol disagrees vehemently with you and said the Huth one is a nailed-on one. Can you explain why to our lay people if the ball hits him and his arms are out by his side, as they were?
Because you're allowed to have arms, and because...
So you don't have to do the Ivanovich thing where you stand with your arms behind your body
like you're in some
kind of demented reverse straight jacket?
It does look demented, exactly. No.
You think they should just book Ivanovich whenever he does that?
I think I would, yeah. No, because you have to... It has to be handball. Think about what that means. That means you're trying to gain advantage by using your hand. Huth is trying to block across with his body, and it's quite close range. As I say, it's close range enough for him to have his eyes closed because he knows if the ball strikes him in the face or anywhere personal, it's going to hurt. He's just being brave. It's not down to him that the ball strikes his wrist. It's not something he was trying to achieve.
See, what's pretty incredible about, I mean, the first one with Danny Simpson is that his hunger and desire to get round Schmeichel as the chance is created for Mane to score and to get there typified what Leicester are about. And do you know what? Big clubs get big decisions because that's what Leicester are at the moment, aren't they? They're getting the decisions for them.
Well, on the decisions
they
front...
They did, but you could see the effects from... And I mean it in a way that where referees and linesmen have given them the benefit of the doubt. We've had years of clubs, the bigger clubs, so-called bigger clubs, getting the decisions.
All right, I'll circle back to that because I'm not sure that's quite what's happening here. But I wanted to ask you about what Koeman said, since he's your mate, Alison, and Rory perhaps less so in your case. But he came out and he said that basically if Leicester continue getting decisions like they get today, I'm paraphrasing here, Ronald, they'll win the title. But that's not to say that simply because they're being lucky with referees, the referees are helping them to the title. It was something to that effect that he basically said. It's not very nice, is it, Rory?
No, but it's understandable, I think, from a manager who's seen his team narrowly beaten and has, in both instances, although I certainly don't think Huth was a penalty, I think Simpson, you could make a case for it being a penalty. In both instances, he might have felt that on another day with another referee, with the same referee in a slightly different position, his team might not have lost that game. So I think it's understandable that Koeman said that. I mean, I've not done a study on it, so I can't pretend to be a complete expert, but I don't really recall that many instances this season where you feel Leicester have got incredibly favourable decisions. They've had a couple go against them, even, that are slightly kind of sort of unfortunate. But I don't know. I think that you could go through any team season, big or small, red or blue, black or white, and say that they've had... You could build a case to say they've been favoured by referees or they've not been favoured by referees. I genuinely don't think that... Well, if Leicester... Look, Leicester are 7 points clear. The referees haven't given them 7 points.
If he gives a penalty, he has to send Danny Simpson off as well.
Right, so that means that Danny Simpson isn't there to go and have that awful miss and to go and blow his chance and some other dude's there, and then they score, and then it's two goals down, Ronnie. Hmm?
No, I'm just making
just
the
kidding,
point. It's a,
yeah,
it's
no, of course.
It's a, look, you know, he has to send him off as well.
This is the thing with...
I don't think the referee wanted to do it. If I'm blatantly honest, I think the referee thought about it, and a bit like where Koeman's coming from, he's probably in a senior.
I'm not 100% sure, actually, that he does need to send him off in that situation. Because
if it's not deliberate...
Well, no. He can. I think, actually, that there's a situation where he could give a penalty and not send him off. The reason being is that it's not necessarily a denial of a goal-scoring opportunity because the ball was going to hit Simpson's body. It was a weak shot, right? And the ball was going to... It's like if he hadn't handled it, it would have hit his body, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's not really a denial of a goal-scoring opportunity, but it is a penalty if you felt that he handled it intentionally.
I don't think that nicety exists in reality, though.
No, but it's an unusual thing.
Do you think there is, and it's probably one for Cass, do you think there is a part of referees that's thinking, I don't want to be the guy who, subconsciously, and no one thinks this consciously, but so elite sport is about, it's everyone is trying 100% all of the time, but there's trying 100% and there's trying 100%. Yeah. So is there a part of the referees that's thinking, I don't want to be the guy who, for a marginal decision, ruins the Leicester fairy tale? And is there a part of their opponents, especially teams like Southampton, who don't have a vast amount left to play for? They've got Swansea coming up. Obviously, when they play Sunderland next week, it's different because Sunderland have a lot to play for. But say when they're at home to Swansea will have switched off a little bit because they're safe. But is there a part... Does the romance start to kind of affect their opponents, Cass?
I think there's a part of the... In the human brain of humans doing what they do, they have that indecision on a decision on a split second. And I've seen referees put their whistle to the mouth, look like they're going to go, give the pen, and something's happened in that microsecond that's changed their mind. And I think that happens. I've seen that happen with referees. I've been in matches involved where they've gone, you know that they've changed their mind on them in a tiniest amount of time. And well, I felt that was a part
Syed
of the...
would probably tell you that, and I think you'd probably be right, that sometimes it has to do with the fact that there are certain unconscious reflexes that we do, like putting the whistle to your mouth, but he's not actually blowing because the synapses are firing in his brain and he's processing what he saw.
And there's also voices in his ear from his assistants telling him, don't blow your whistle!
And sometimes voices in his ear because I'm told not to talk about these things for some reason. It is undeniable, though, I think. I mean,
referees are human, yeah.
Referees are human, and bigger teams tend to get decisions because unconsciously you know that if you make an awful mistake that hurts Manchester United or Liverpool, you will be on the back pages and you will be a hate figure. Whereas if you make an honest mistake that hurts Bournemouth, nobody's really going to care because the full population of Bournemouth fans could probably sit in this room.
And the crowd. Yet again, the King Power was rocking with free booze. I mean, it's hard to...
Is it free booze?
Yeah,
free pint for everyone. He's cracked that, hasn't he, Vichai? He's worked out that if you do give people free food and free beer, they tend to quite like you. It's amazing.
So I didn't know that he gives away.
No, it was his birthday.
It was his birthday. It's his birthday on Monday. It's his birthday today as we're recording. Happy birthday, Vichai. So he gave them 30,000 free lagers, 30,000 free donuts, and
donuts.
One gigantic free flag that said "Happy Birthday, Mr. Chairman."
See,
which I cannot believe they came from anyone other than the club.
Well, he probably can get the booze cheap because he's a duty free man, isn't he?
That's
doesn't
right.
he own half of Asia? Or...
Yeah, but it's not like he smuggles it in to the country. It doesn't make any sense. I just think it's interesting. So, like, you can go and you can either have a donut.
For one day only. This doesn't happen every time they play at home.
But they do give away a lot of free stuff, Lester. They have done it before.
Is it a brand name donut? Is it like Krispy Kreme
or
something?
Cream. It's Krispy Kreme.
It is Krispy Kreme.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about Wes Morgan because I feel like we're cycling through the different Leicester stars, and today's the day we celebrate Wes Morgan.
Wes Morgan Day. Happy
yes,
Wes Morgan
exactly.
Day.
Exactly.
Donuts for everybody.
as they say in Germany, Guten Morgen.
Ah,
come
clever.
On, that's a good
very
joke.
Clever. Very clever.
That is good. That is good.
Yeah, no, look, okay, who thinks when the players vote for player of the season at Leicester, you've probably done this while I've been away, I mean, who will the players vote for? I think they'll probably vote for Wes Morgan, won't they?
We're what all players, the Leicester players
yeah,
or the
yeah,
other players?
Yeah, when they vote, when the players vote for their player of the season, everyone's banging on about Mahrez being the player of the season externally.
Do you know what? I think it's one of them situations where you could look at that team and go, do you know what? It's unfair to say an individual. Because they've been so good. No, I'm serious, Gab.
Yeah.
They've been so good in so many different areas.
You know, the difference is, and I apologise to those who aren't Roman Catholics like myself, but or who aren't Christian like myself, but if you read the Bible, there's a parable of the talents in there. So the reality is, if you're Wes Morgan, you can work at 100% all season long, and I will commend you for your effort, but you will produce less than Riyad Mahrez because he simply has more talents. And if he works at 100%, then he will be more productive and more important to you, right?
There'll be a lot of people in the Leicester squad who are aware that Morgan's been a huge influence, but I think there's no question that they, like everybody else, will vote for Mahrez to be player of the season.
Oh, you see, I don't think the players will do that for Kaz's reason, that they'll know that their accolades will come the way of Mahrez and Vardy.
Yeah.
And the people who probably they couldn't have done
within
without it. They couldn't have done it without someone like Wes Morgan.
Well, the discussion of
Captain Fantastic, their
Leicester.
Own Captain Fantastic.
In fact,
I'm having a problem here. We're talking about a guy. You're saying talents. His talent is he's a real defender. He absolutely has stood out alongside Hoof at the heart of that back line. Everything you think of recent weeks, they're winning games 1-0. The two centre halves have done everything about what's good about defending. Defending's an art. There's very few defenders. I know some great ones that ain't as good as defenders. You look at the Van Dijk, who's playing for Southampton. Tremendous athlete. Great. He's like a Rolls-Royce machine. But he ain't a proper defender like Morgan and Hoof.
The reason Morgan was in a centre-forward position was because Leicester, I think they had a free kick, right?
Yeah.
Which came to nothing. And at that point, you would... Yes, thank
yes.
you. You're pointing
no,
at me.
No, because I hope
do you know
you're
where I'm going?
Make...
Do you know where I'm going? Can you let me finish and then correct me?
I hope you're going to say what I want you to say.
Okay. At that point, there was a moment when Morgan, you know, it's come to nothing. You would expect your center back to get the heck back into defense, right? He makes the decision that Leicester are going to win the ball back and put in a cross. Christian Fuchs knows that Morgan makes that decision, and he puts in a very good cross. Mm. Southampton, you know, as much as we all love Ronald Koeman, clearly there's a major break. And oh, Virgil van Dijk and Jose Font, they're so good. They're so smart. And their goalkeeper, Fraser Foster, he's so clever. He's so big, right? But not one of them notices the large man from Birmingham who plays for Jamaica standing in the middle of the box. So it's left to Jordy Clasie, who is, I think, literally in the size of a Smurf, to go and pick him up because nobody shouts and talks. I just wanted to talk about how we don't often recognize the intelligence, but Morgan made a really intelligent decision at that time, as did Fuchs, and I think that speaks volume, and I think that wasn't necessarily celebrated enough.
You said exactly what I
Thank
was thinking,
you.
Gab, because so many times you'd see a centre-half in that position start jogging back to his own halfway line. Get back. Right. His first intentions, his first thoughts are, I'm getting back to defend. I'm a proper defender, which he is. But he's chose to stay in an area that if they do win the ball back, he knows the fullback.
Well, I'll tell you another one. He didn't just choose.
That typified Leicester for me.
He didn't just choose to stand there, but he made sure a teammate knew that this was happening, so that Leicester made adjustments. And if we had an aerial view of the pitch, which we don't have, you would see that somebody else, I don't know who, I could find out, from basically went and covered for Morgan in that situation. They speak a lot to the confidence of this guy to go and do it. Final word on Southampton. I naturally turn to you, Alison, because of your cousin Sammy Lee there. But actually, we talked about who looks like who. Like, you possibly share a little bit of some of the same genes, right?
Sammy Lee, separated at birth, me and Sammy Lee.
Is this a successful season for Southampton?
Of course it's a successful season for Southampton. I mean, mathematically, they could make Champions League places, couldn't they? But of course it is. It's been a season where Ronald's had to really keep hold of players who they thought might go in January. He's had potential insurrection. As we've just discussed, he brought in Virgil, and everyone thought, oh, I don't know. And he's proved to be extremely good defender for them. So I think it has been a good season. The fact that we're doubting that it's a good season for Southampton, when they're probably going to finish, what, 6th, 7th, probably, and we're slightly disappointed, proves that he's created a dynasty in 10 minutes there. So yes, it is a good season for Southampton.
I actually agree with you. I think Ronald Koeman is a phenomenal coach, and I think... Ronald, if you're listening, I know you listen often. Get in touch with our producer, Dave McGuire. It would be great maybe to have you on Monday morning.
We could take the show to Southampton.
Oh, come on. I'm sorry. I'm not going down to freaking Southampton to talk to Ronald Koeman.
We can't pay expenses.
Let's go to Liverpool and Tottenham. Tottenham's missed opportunity. I actually thought this was a really, really good game. It was very high intensity. Liverpool kind of surprised me in a positive way, Rory, because I thought they'd be sort of thinking ahead to, you know, Borussia Dortmund and everything, and you know, they only have too much else to play for, but they were up for it, and I thought they generally played well.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Just Spurs are probably, and this isn't meant as no disrespect to Leicester, but Spurs are probably the most coherent, cohesive side I've seen this season in the Premier League. They are kind of, to me, they look like the best team in the league. Obviously, the table doesn't sort of bear that out, but Spurs look like they've kind of got the best plan and kind of know how to do it, and Liverpool aren't any of those things, and you wouldn't expect, you know, there is in terms of their performance this season, there's been kind of light years between them, but I thought it looked like it was a really good game, quite intense, between two very good teams who were sort of reasonably well balanced, reasonably well matched, which you wouldn't necessarily expect, particularly because Liverpool could have been forgiven for maybe allowing to drift, as you say, towards the Europa League and Dortmund, because Liverpool have got nothing to play for in the league now. You know, they're not going to qualify for the Champions League. It's unlikely they'll qualify for the Europa League at all. In fact, as the only way they get into it through Europe is by winning the Europa League, which means they'll be in the Champions League.
And then they won't be in the Europa League at all. You're right.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's unlikely that
they've missed out on the Europa League, come what may.
Exactly. Even their season could end in glory, hampered only by the bittersweet tang of failure to be back in the Europa League. But I think it did surprise me how. I think Spurs looked a better team. I think the possession stats bore that out. And it's strange seeing Liverpool play on the counter-attack at Anfield. But I thought they actually looked much better matched as teams than I thought they would be.
But I agree with you, Rory. Tottenham are the classier side. But when Liverpool play well, which they have in spurts throughout the season under Klopp, it's very hard to tell the difference between Spurs and Liverpool. The same system, the same approach, the same philosophy, the same cult of manager. Same tactics, same everything.
Yeah.
And when Liverpool are playing well, they are very similar. And I think we were very lucky to get a very open game with lots of chances and end-to-end stuff, because when two teams are so similar, sometimes it cancels each other out in a sci-fi sort of way and you get a pile of stodge. But it was Liverpool playing very well. Spurs possibly could have played better.
I sense contrarian Gab coming on.
Is there any other type of Gab?
There is. There was happy agreeing Gab earlier. I appreciate that both teams can play at a high intensity and whatever, but... When you said they're the same team, Alison, I mean...
Well, I spent
who's Liverpool's
a good day.
Dele Alli?
No, that's the one difference. It's not Lallana. Although Lallana, when he plays well, he's really... Again, he's inconsistent. When he plays well, he's really very talented and incisive. And
Sturridge's Kane with a totally different skill set?
No, but when I'm talking about as a block. We do this talking tactics thing for the Times, and you get clips. So I was going through the clips of Spurs and Liverpool, and I ended up making the point, if you were severely colourblind, you wouldn't know which team this is about, this particular clip's about. Because when they're both playing very well...
Yeah, it's the speed of the game as well. It's very similar. They move the ball really quickly into positions that they try and expose you. And yes, Kane isn't really like Sturridge, and Dele Alli's not really got a Liverpool player that you could compare him with. But there were a lot of similarities within that setup of the way they play. I think a big testament is to Liverpool didn't really have anything to play for, and yet they made a real game of it, which, as the stamp of Klopp, where you feel like you're not going to have a end of the season where we're just going to have indifferent performances. I thought that was a really good performance by them against Tottenham, who are going for the title, you know, which you mustn't forget. You know, so they had a real urgency about them that you'd expect from Tottenham. By the way, just on one point, what was Sakho doing? He felt like he was playing like Franz Beckenbauer at the back, doing all flicks and little passes. Did you not notice him?
God forbid, he should have confidence in his technical ability.
Ian Wright said that Sakho was... Ian Wright said that Sakho had been a sort of... had this awful performance. And I had a text from Tony Barrett this morning, which expressed much the same sentiment. Now,
read us Tony Barrett's text.
No, I can't.
In his accent, please. Come on.
It's libelous. I can't read it.
Well, I know you're saying that having confidence in his ability, but
I think he did have a
decent game. But the problem is, I'm not sure he can do that week in, week out. I'd be very worried for a Liverpool back four.
The other problem with him is that what Wright picked up on, there were 3 minutes where Sakho kind of went nuts and he started doing all these stupid things. The other 87, he was absolutely fine, did nothing wrong.
Yeah,
but he does have that, and there's too many players at Liverpool who are fine, not great. There's a lot of players who you look at and think they'd be good to have in the squad. You can't have a team built out of them if you have any ambition. And there's too many players at Liverpool who are basically pretty good most of the time and then have a couple of minutes where they're dreadful. Mignolet's the same. Sakho, Lovren's prone to it as well. And you can't really have that if you want to achieve anything. And that's what Klopp has to sort out. What the difference between those two clubs, not teams, is that Spurs have a much leaner squad. There's too much fat in Liverpool's squad. Not literally. And I think that's the challenge that Klopp has to kind of approach this summer if he wants to make Liverpool look more like Spurs.
Okay, enough Liverpool. Both Coutinho and Kane obviously scored very nice goals. And I was very impressed with Coutinho, actually. Our debate here, or one of our debates, should we start with Remy Gard or Dr. Boner? We'll move on to Dr. Boner, shall we? We'll start with Remy Gard. All right, we can joke about Villa, but actually, it's not that funny because this is historically a very big club and a club that you've had an association with, Cass. But before I go to you with the context and everything, I want to go to Rory.
Mm.
Because on paper, from what I've been told, and I had a long conversation with somebody who was flabbergasted by Villa's situation, I think possibly because he helped get somebody at Villa hired who turned out to be not very good. Well, they made the point that, look, they kind of did the right thing. They brought in an experienced, open-minded guy in this Tom Fox character. They used a lot of analytics. They had the forward thinkers. They had everybody in place, except perhaps for a manager who fit the system. And then it all went horrible, and then they compounded it by appointing Remy Gard. Were you surprised?
I don't think that you can say that Remy Gard is a symptom of what went wrong at Villa rather than the cause of it. He was the wrong appointment at the wrong time, but I'm not sure they could have got anyone in really. Well, the problems at that club run deeper than who the manager is what I would say. So you could have got a Pearson in, and they might have been able to stay up because until 2 weeks ago, Norwich, Sunderland and Newcastle were all busy waiting for them. And Norwich have now put on a bit of kind of form, and that would probably have counted Villa out. But until the start of March, there were only 2 wins out of being properly in the thick of the battle. But the issue at Villa goes back 6 years, and it runs all the way up to the owner. It's a litany of bad decisions. Tom Fox, I agree, is well thought of within the game as a commercial guy, but there is a sense, I think, with Tom Fox that he's kind of a mini Woodward. He's good at one side of it, the football side of it. He doesn't know that much about. That's not his area of expertise, which is fine. But the problem is that then leaves you open to making bad decisions because you don't have the right information or the best information or the most information. And so what you get is this situation where he is being sort of pulled hither and thither by lots of people who have their own agendas. And so you end up appointing Hendrik Halmstad as...
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
As technical director, who the club were warned against because they were told, look, this is not the right appointment, that doesn't work. But I think everything traces back to Lerner and the complete sort of drift that he's instituted. This is ultimately on Randy Lerner.
And Martin O'Neill, of course.
No, I think you can look at O'Neill's spending and question it and question whether it was wise. And look, when Lerner pulled the plug on the money because O'Neill had racked up a massive wage bill, it was hard not to sympathise with him, because you were sort of thinking, actually, look, it is going to cost you twice as much as you spent already to get from sixth to fourth, and that's fine, and that's a decision you have to make. But then what he's allowed to happen at the club is he's made a succession of bad appointments in terms of management, managers and sort of football staff. He's allowed the club to drift. He's tried to sell it. He had an offer to buy it and then pulled out. It's just been chaos for 5 or 6 years, and that ultimately is Lerner's responsibility.
I have two little Villa-related nuggets that I wanted to relate. One of them concerns the appointment of Remy Gard, and one of them concerns something Tim Sherwood said.
Do tell, Gab.
Which one would you like?
We're agog.
Which one would you like to hear first?
Tim Sherwood.
Somebody, this was pointed out at the Sloan Analytics conference, that earlier in the season, Tim Sherwood, while talking that all this tactics and stuff, analytics and data is all nonsense, he actually kept saying that, you know, at the end of games, well, we created better chances than they did, and we could have scored more, and we should have done better, and we were unlucky, and blah, 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 which is basically expected goals.
Mm.
So he was actually
doing analytics.
Well, or at least he was doing it based on what he saw rather than what the numbers told him. But maybe if he'd made the point about the analytics to his superiors, who thought that, he just doesn't get the numbers, maybe he might have had more support from the ownership, and maybe he might have stuck around longer. That also tells me, by the way, that Villa's points total was a lot worse than their play suggested when Sherwood was let go. And I think that's something you can throw up at the owners. The other point is, I didn't get this Remy Gard 3.5-year deal. It just seems absolutely absurd to me. And I spoke to somebody who spoke to Villa's people, and they said that when they appointed him, like, well, we gave him a 3.5-year deal because we have a 3-year plan and we're going to stick with him come what may. We have a very clear idea of where he's going to go with us. And he talked about the philosophy and all this BS, to which my friend made the point, well, but if you get relegated, there is no 3-year plan. And they genuinely thought it was impossible that they were going to get relegated. You got to have serious questions about these people, Fox and Almstadt, if they really looked at it and said, oh, look, you know, there's almost no possibility because we're just better.
Wasn't there Paddy O'Reilly as well, recruitment?
Paddy O'Reilly, is that really his name?
Paddy Riley.
You guys are making these names.
Paddy Riley.
Is he your countryman?
I had some serious stuff about Remy Gard. I was watching his team. Now, I understand what you talked about with Tim Sherwood and the analytics and working with analysts. I think there's a lot of lazy managers who don't.
I'm not suggesting he's lazy. I'm saying it was just funny.
Nor am I.
He came to the same conclusion by looking that the analysts came to by crunching their numbers. Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
I had a real problem about Remy Gard, not only with his contract like you, but the football that I was watching, like Tim Sherwood, I'm thinking, this isn't a team that looks like they're trying to score goals, trying to stay up, trying to win a football match. It just didn't look like it. I watched them play at Man City and they need to win. They only had wins left in it. And they didn't have a shot for 80 minutes. And I'm thinking, surely your remit, as you before you go out in this game, is how are we going to cause a very average back four in Man City problems, who had lost to Tottenham and Leicester, okay, much better teams than Villa. And I saw absolutely nothing in their style of play, the way they were set up, how any individual was given a role in the team's way of playing that could, you know, establish a way of winning for them. I couldn't see from Remy Gard anything at all. I was told, and alleged, and this was, I was told...
By Paddy
Riley. No, I was told by a very good source that he tried to bring Gerard Houllier back to the club.
Stop it. Stop. Stop. Why do you tell me these things?
Why? Because
who, Remy Gard wanted Gerard Houllier to hold his hand?
No, above him. To work Brian Little's role.
I heard that as well.
And I was told that a long time ago.
There wouldn't be a bad appointment for what? From a Birmingham City point of view? Seriously,
what? The Villa heads, obviously...
are up there.
Yeah. But they did not want Gerard Houllier for the certain reasons.
For obvious reasons.
Obvious reasons, yeah. But that completely undermined Remy Gard very early on in his tenure as manager.
So I'm sorry. Now, wouldn't you, Remy Gard, have come when you go and you do an interview with this guy, right? Mm. And you say... hey, Remy, well, first of all, I looked at your Wikipedia page and I've kind of noticed that Leon became much better after you left. Hmm. And I've also kind of noticed that while you were very quick to take credit for the Leon's Academy and all the young players, you actually only spent 1 year there. And I've also noticed that you spent a long time as an assistant to Houllier and Claude Puel, both of whom might have infected your brain with stupid weirdo ideas. And also, I've also noticed that you're not young anymore. And yet nobody ever thought to give you a shot in all those years that you were an assistant. Nobody thought let's see if he wants to coach, which is also kind of weird.
Gab, I'm 100% with you in what you're saying. I'm just saying what I was taught. And I think the problem came, once you start losing games as a manager, you start asking different questions. Because you think, if he'd have wanted Houllier in the football club, when he first got the job at Villa, he'd have said, I want someone above me that does a lot of the work that Brian Little would do.
Wouldn't Olmsted be doing this stuff?
Well,
isn't that why he's there?
It hasn't happened. But I mean, I don't know why.
What kind of a guy gets hired as a club and then says, oh, by the way, my boss, my technical director, I want him gone. I want him gone. What kind of a person does that? Especially when you're Remy Gard and you've got no freaking CV to begin with. I understand if you hire Jose Mourinho, then yes, you give him the 3.5-year deal and whatever, because he's actually achieved something in his managerial career. But this guy, you're going to bend over backwards? You, a last place team, you're going to bend over backwards for some freaking Remy, for the first Remy guard that walks in your door? This is planning?
Can we just bring it full circle, though? Because Rory began by saying it stops, the buck stops with Lerner. And it does, because appointing Gard was a very romantic appointment and he sold it to Gard on a romantic basis. He told him he loved the club and he felt that Remy Gard had the beauty of soul and ability to save it. And
he really said these things to
Gard. That's rubbish. And he should have appointed somebody who was hard, tough, pragmatic, knew the Premier League and the tough side of it more than anyone that he could, you know, you could possibly dream up. Instead, he went to the least likely candidate and sold it to him on the basis of love.
Right, let's move on to Dr. Boner.
Stop diddling, Gab.
Doctor who?
What's funny about this guy is the former Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, if you read his name, it also looks like his name could be Boner. But in fact, it's at least he pronounces it Boner. This guy could pronounce his name Bonar, like sonar or something, but no. Anyway, we were teased on Saturday, announcement, big Sunday Times drugs and sports story. And then when you read the paper, you essentially found out that, I mean, this guy, he's somebody who's currently facing a disciplinary case for having a patient who had a tumor and it was malignant and who was a terminal. He's accused of not telling them that this person was terminally ill so that he could continue to apply his patient with various treatments. Anyway, that's the accusation against him. He'll have a hearing on that. So this is the kind of individual, somebody who it's not even clear if his medical license is active right now. This guy used to work with somebody who apparently was like in his late 30s, but had ambitions to be a professional cyclist, was some kind of amateur cyclist. The two worked together. The cyclist then apparently felt that Dr. Boner was prescribing some kind of...
cocktail?
Performance enhanced, some stuff that was illegal or not in line with... the doping code. So he went and he reported it to the UK Anti-Doping Association. They didn't quite follow up on it. They felt it wasn't their jurisdiction. So then this person went and spoke to the Sunday Times. And the Sunday Times insight team set up some kind of sting operation, which they sometimes do, where they get people to go in with hidden cameras, pose as clients of Dr. Boner, who it certainly appears, if you listen to the film, that he boasts about having worked with 150 top sportsmen, Although, of course, top sportsman is one of those words, like, you know, what is a top sportsman? And he suggests that he's given them EPO and other drugs over the years, and he suggests he basically offers to do it to these undercover reporters, effectively. Right? That's the story. I'm not missing much. Oh, sorry. And then Dr. Boner says that afterwards that, no, he never actually offered to do anything illegal. This was all part of some sort of therapeutic use exemption type thing. He was just bringing their levels back up to a normal situation. And he named a bunch of football clubs as well among his clients, and all of them now deny it. Rory, does this warrant massive alarm bells and freakouts? Because what I see, frankly, is a quack fantasist telling a bunch of lies to who's told lies before, possibly telling more lies to people hoping to get their business. But in reality, there's no the Sunday Times were unable to get any confirmation of anybody that he's actually worked with, anybody relevant, anybody he's ever given drugs to. As far as we know, he's never given illegal performance-enhancing drugs to anybody.
Well, I mean, I think the first thing is that if you were Birmingham City, who are one of his alleged clubs, you'd be asking for a refund. The other thing, I think...
It's here all week, folks.
The claim from Dr. Boner doesn't stand up. The claim from Dr. Boner in itself isn't enough. It's not. It isn't. As you say, there's too many things that it could be. It could be him lying. He could be a fantasist. He could be trying to drum up business. It could be completely true. Who knows? But
well, he also denies it, too, which is weird, because you would actually think that since you've been busted,
yeah,
if you had evidence, you would actually want to collaborate and act as a whistleblower.
Gap, like in films.
Exactly.
And but I think
which, by the way, sorry, if I go back, it's my understanding is the cyclist who initially reported Dr. Boner, that's what he did. The cyclist was found tested positive. He had a 2-year ban, and he got that ban reduced by 3 months by implicating Dr. Boner with the UK anti-doping agency.
I think that Dr. Boner's revelations or claims or whatever, they are not worth worrying about too much on their own. But there is no question this is an issue, and I know Gab, you are very sceptical about talking about doping in football, and I think you have many well-reasoned arguments for why that is your stance. But I think it is an issue that football generally doesn't take quite seriously enough.
What would you like to see?
Well, I think I'd like to see players tested randomly more than once a year, which is roughly the average as it stands at the moment, which I just don't think that's enough.
You're talking about applies to players who don't play in European competition.
Yes, yeah, within the Premier League. I mean, I think it's got better, and UEFA are more on it than the Premier League generally, and more on it than the FA. That's partly a funding issue. I would like, and the clubs themselves do plenty of work. I saw a piece by Ken Early in the Irish Times talking about doping and sort of combining it with Leicester, and there is this constant kind of hubbub of suspicion around Leicester, which, as far as I can tell, is completely unfounded. The point of that is that once there are doubts, you need to do as much as you can to alleviate all of those doubts. So if Leicester are completely clean, then, which as far as we know they are, they have the right not to have their incredible story spoiled by this sort of susurration of rumour and innuendo. So I think I'd like to see the authorities do more than they are and as much as they can to establish that the sport is clean. I would love to believe that football is clean. I would love it to be clean. I think there are, and Gab, you have lots of, we've talked about this before, you present a very compelling case for why it is clean. But
not the whole sport. I'm saying is in the main, you know, you need to come up with more compelling reasons to doubt somebody rather than something like, oh, look, they were really bad, now they're really good.
The point that Ken makes in his piece is that, you know, that they should be testing the blood. In Germany, a lot of teams test players' blood, and maybe we're not doing that enough in the Premier League. Premier League clubs test their players' saliva every day. If there was any kind of freelance doping going on, the clubs would know about it. There is not a shadow of a doubt about that. So I choose to believe that there isn't anything to suspicious of, but I don't think the authorities do enough to make us all believe that.
They're completely owned medically by their clubs. Mm. You get any tour of any club and the medical facilities, which extends to their close family as well, because they don't want players bringing in bugs into the dressing room. They need them to be as healthy as possible. I've also been at a club when the drug testing team has just arrived completely without anyone knowing it, and they've swarmed over the building.
They rappelled down from the roof.
The calmness about that, I too, like Gab, would be astonished if there are... I'd be astonished if it was done from the top of a football club, that it was a policy at a football club to give their players oxygenated blood so they all ran a bit faster. And I would be astonished if players had it. I just don't see how they're physically able to escape the system to do something on their own.
Okay, enough doping. How about some quick hits? Arsenal pummel Watford, who look as if they're already on the beach, and Wenger talks about the spirit of 98, which I think was when they were way behind and had a billion games in hand, which they don't now. But anyway, he still believes in the title. Do you, Cass?
No. Without saying being Groundhog Day, as we are month after month with Arsenal, is way too little too late. And I thought it was the perfect time to play Watford after losing to them in the Cup. And then having him at the Emirates, I just thought it was going to be a bit of a whipping, and it was.
But Theo's back on the score sheet, so that's like a new signing. Wild and crazy relegation six-pointer at Carrow Road, but it's Norwich who edge it 3-2. Rory, was this the game in which your mate Rafa relegated the tune?
I wouldn't ever express it that way, Gab. I think that's not entirely fair.
It is a bit of a wind-up, I suppose.
They have a really big task ahead of them now. I think if it had been a draw, that would have been bad enough, but to concede that goal in the 93rd minute, it feels like a real hammer blow. A lot of it now depends, this is a statement of the obvious, but it depends on whether Norwich can keep up their form or whether they can suck Palace back into it, but they have to start winning soon.
Can you imagine what a great story that would be? Manchester United beat Everton 1-0, and they're just a single point out of fourth place. Yet Louis van Gaal said something which I found disturbing and unsettling and un-Van Gaal-like afterwards. He said that United were terrible, I'm paraphrasing here. He said that United stole the win and that they were lucky to beat Everton. Is this newer, humbler Van Gaal unsettling? Is there a deeper meaning to this?
No, it's a blip. Two reasons. One is Van Gaal was overtaken by the emotion of the occasion and the honours being bestowed upon Sir Bobby Charlton. Indeed, he shed a tear, and he would have liked, I think, for that game to have somehow expressed this so-called philosophy of the club and been more passionate. And the second thing was, he's telling the truth. It was a dreadful game, and United were awful, and they were very lucky indeed.
But weren't Everton really bad, too?
They were bad in an Everton sort of way, but they played the nicer football.
Chelsea win 4-0 at Aston Villa, and we actually see some of these new faces in the Blues lineup. Matt Biasga at the back, Ruben Loftus-Cheek in midfield, Pato scoring on his debut, something he keeps doing throughout his career. Cass, are we glimpsing the future here?
Maybe with Loftus-Cheek. It might be a bit of an argument there that he will get a sort of a starting role next season. Pato showed some glimpses, like you said. Great ball. Obviously scored a penalty, made a great ball to Pedro. The problem is, it was poor old Villa they were playing, so it wasn't great evidence of where they are as a team.
Nice to see these guys on the pitch, though, I guess. Gary Neville is no longer the Valencia manager, and there's plenty of I-told-you-sos all around. Rory, full disclosure, I'm a big Gary Neville fan. I'm assuming you are, too. But was this a crime of arrogance or ignorance? Or was it simply someone who trusted in his own abilities and got some very bad advice from some very bad people?
It's a little bit of all three, I think. I'm a big fan of Gary's as well. But I think he didn't realise the scale of the task he was taking on. I think he thought that he would get away with a sort of easier ride if he wasn't in England. That was wrong. I think he underestimated how much chaos Peter Lim has kind of instituted at that club. And I think basically he would have been better off, and this is the benefit of hindsight and told you so's and what have you, he maybe would have been better off taking a slightly lower profile English club where he would have been given a bit more time and a bit more understanding. That's not Valencia. Valencia aren't like that.
Manchester City beat up Bournemouth, another team on holiday. Although I think, let's be fair, Bournemouth pretty much deserve it, right? They've won their Champions League this year. But more importantly, Kevin De Bruyne is back. Whee! Alisson, had he been around all season, would they be the ones battling Leicester City for the title? And can they use the return of Kevin De Bruyne to do something unexpected, like win the Champions League or go very close?
No.
Or even just knock out PSG?
No and no. No. De Bruyne is, I think he's got just a tiny bit of the flat track bully about him. He does tend to shine when the opposition aren't amazing and City have found their groove. Then he looks lovely. He looks an absolutely lovely player. I've not seen enough evidence of him taking hold of a game by the scruff of the neck and dictating it and being the player. So I don't know that it would have made a huge difference. I've tipped PSG to win the Champions League. So of course City are not going to overcome that obstacle. And what was the other question? title. There's something. The fact that you're even saying that about City, that one player might have made the difference, that much difference, so that they could be challenging Leicester. No, there's deeper problems.
Wow, a little missed negativity today.
Anyway, I've got a question for you. Classico time in La Liga. Please tell us, how did things work out for your mate ZZ Top?
Ooh, that would be your mate, Zidane.
He's not my mate.
He's not my mate.
Oh, one of the most overrated players ever.
Well, he headbutted the Matrix.
Must be an interesting thing about him.
I think that worked out really well for Zidane, and this is kind of maybe perhaps a little bit overlooked in some of the coverage, is that this wonderful narrative where in the first Clásico this year, Rafa feels compelled, and Rory might correct me on this if he so chooses, not to play Casemiro and to play this demented, unbalanced lineup. I don't know if Florentino forced him, or maybe Rafa said, like, oh, look, let me go and play all the crazy attacking players you want me to play, Florentino, and we'll just get our rear ends handed to us, and I'll prove to you that it doesn't work. Is that pretty much what happened, right,
Yeah,
Rory?
That sounds just like Rafa, doesn't it, going into a big game with a really attacking lineup. He's famous for it.
Exactly. But Zidane, he's now played Casemiro like for a month and a half in a row, and he went into that game, and it wasn't Galactico Real Madrid, it was Mourinho Real Madrid. It was sort of defend and counter, and let's get Gareth Bale and Cristiano to actually work and do some defending. And after the first 20-25 minutes, when Barcelona were maybe a bit tired, also because a lot of their guys came back from the international break and were in South America, Luis Suarez misses a gilt-edged chance. After that, Real Madrid became more comfortable and they grew into the game. And even though they went a goal down, they equalized almost straight away. Keylor Navas made a tremendous save. At the end, Gareth Bale had a goal disallowed, which should have stood. Perfectly good goal. Cristiano, I thought, was really, really good and humble and energized. I know, it's amazing, isn't it? Barcelona had once had been 39 games unbeaten to that point. I don't know if it's not going to derail them for La Liga. I don't know if there's a deeper thing. We'll find out soon enough. They play Atletico Madrid in the Champions League. But, you know, it did kind of serve as a reminder that Zidane can be quite grown up and savvy when he needs to be. And I thought he showed a lot of personality. And I hope Mr. Perez is pleased. Right, that's all we've got time for today. Many, many, many thanks to my guests today. The excellent Tony Cascarino, the outstanding Alison Rudd, and the Didsbury-based Rory K. Smith. Please press that subscribe button. We're going to be back next week. Or actually, I won't be, because I'm going on holiday. That's right. I'll be joining Rory. I'll be visiting Didsbury. Can you recommend some sites?
Yeah. Well, now.
I'm sure there's many people who's... Didsbury is like a pleasant suburb of Manchester, right?
Yeah, it's kind of Manchester's, what's the best equivalent?
St. Albans?
Highgate.
Highgate, really?
Yeah.
So you have a large cemetery with the tomb of famous political people there.
Oh, we've got so many cemeteries.
There you go. It's a wonderful place to go trick-or-treating, as I understand it, as well. So kids out there who are listening, next October 31st, please go visit the Smith household. You can also, if you're still with us, you can remember to press that subscribe button. And, of course, you can also get exclusive football highlights free if you subscribe to The Times. It's just £12 for a 12-week trial. Just search The Times online. You can also enjoy the brand-new revamped Times website, which I'm still wrapping my head around, but visually looks quite stunning. Till next time. Bye-bye.
Your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times now comes with access to every Barclays Premier League goal. Refresh your app, choose your team, accept notification, and you're away.
Thank you for downloading. To discover more, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.